SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races. Hour three, just making some final adjustments. A couple of notable scratches, particularly in the for later on, for those of you playing the late multis. Two horses came out, Bronze Age, the six, in the nightcap, Moquette, and the nine horse as well, that was a bit of a... It's a bit of a question mark. One of those flat XL, the Toscano. That horse scared me a little bit. There's several races today where you need to use, at least three. And there's some places where budget constraints are going to, make it very difficult. Those two scratches kind of help in the nightcap. Particularly, because money laundering on the outside won't be 12-1. That's a morning line that's going to come. That price is going to come down. Kimmel, Discreet Mission, and that Smash Williams 7-2, being given away. It looks like that helped getting a couple of horses out of that slot. Didn't get any help in the early action. The Pick five races 2 through 6 today. Don't forget, you got the non-winners of two jump race, and we discussed it a little with Arch Kingsley yesterday, his boss man. There is one scratch out of there, too. 65 came out. Hendricks came out at 5-2. The horse to beat, and boss man... absolutely going to play boss man for Arch, but Whitman's Poetry, the Jack Fisher. In fact, both of Jack Fisher's horses look like the other competition for boss man. So 6-2-5 for me in the jump race. But then the pick five starts in race two. You got a 16 non-2 going a mile and an eighth. Those can sometimes be a bit of a stagger fest. Then Maiden Claimers, Statebreds. Another three turf sprints today, by the way, assuming everything's okay. And that third race that starts the early pick four is, if not wide open, it's pretty well open. And this is one of those places where, you'd love to, like we did the other day on Monday, where we said, maybe go 1 by 6. And that, this is one of those places where if you had a single in somewhere and then you wanted to go a little wider, but you're facing just as tough an equation. I'm anxious to see what Seth is doing in these races, the third and the fourth. The fourth race is a 35 non-3, and these are real horses. I mean, there's some horses that with stake experience. There's horses that are allowance winners, etc. And it is, I good luck here. Pretentious on the rail for Bill Mott, Acoustic, Jason Service. You've got Terrible Day going back to the turf after hasn't been on the grass for a while, but this looks like a very clever Tom Amos maneuver. A Terrible Day could end up on the lead, the Argentinian.
Summer is one of the
Glenn Richmond. 9-2 for Rudy. Be counted off a long time. Makes a return in here for Motion. It's unbelievable. Soluble drops in for a tag after being competitive for ages in allowance company. Pletcher drops Your Only Man, who looks like a fit. I mean, what is that? Eight? Eight out of 11? Brutal. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 out of the 11 look like they can win. That's what makes it fun. I think you can tiptoe through the fifth, that Our Circle of Love for Michelle Nevin, whose horses are running just great and very competitive. Horacio De Paz, and I put a thing on Twitter the other day, De Paz going out on his own, and it appears that Kevin Plank is going to pull back his operation, the Sagamore, is going to trim the sails, and De Paz getting an opportunity to take on clients in a public stable scenario. And De Paz is very, very good. It does a terrific job. He's got Smile More debuting in this spot, and that's the, to me, the alternative. You know, if you can, I think you can lean pretty heavily on Samantha Siegel and Michelle Nevin with Our Circle of Love. Samantha, it's the summer of Samantha. She, Del Mar and Saratoga wins already, and including the stakeout west. And Kieran McLaughlin, you should note, he scratched Face It, and the other Godolphin will run Carnival Lass, and she's debuting, and she gives indication of being okay. But any firster had better be talented if they're going to beat Michelle Nevin, Manny Franco, and Our Circle of Love. So that at least is one place in this sequence that you can maybe scoot through. And then you get to the two-year-old New York bred fillies, and Chad Brown's got Corey Scores, who looks, you know, very much the horse to beat. And Jeremiah Engelhart gets the advantage of a second-time start with Jaded Lady. Linda Rice has got Sassy Agnes. Those all feel like the... I'm sure some people will try to rely on Chad in here with Corey Scores. There's a horse... Tom Albertrani's got a horse with Joe Bravo. It's a keeper, the 6. 10-1. And It's a Keeper got a positive post-debut workout note that kind of hints that she should be a lot better today in her second start. So if you're looking for a price to include in that maiden two-year-old state-bred group, they're going to go 5.5 on the grass. So there's your pick 5, races 2 through 6. And it's a nice sequence. And then the late action, New York bred route, mile on the inner turf, first level allowance. I tell you all the time about how much these races produce terrific mutuals, and this one might not be any exception. There's a lot of good prices to consider in here. I ended up picking Tommy Bush with Pocket Player 12-1, but Shiraz 6-1, Maker, Take It to Scale on the rail for Chad Brown 6-1. There's a lot going on in here. This is one of those spots that every summer, when I look back typically and I go through the plays, it's one of the places that, you know, that we've always noted that New York bred turf routes, male or female, doesn't matter if it's the boys or the girls, these vary, for they're so well matched, they'll all be within a couple of lengths of each other on paper. Then you got the restricted stake, the Shine Again, came up very good. You got maybe 4 in there to consider, and then another state bred allowance, this time a turf sprint. And I picked a big price in here too. Eddie Barker, Samadhi Sky, and Uncle Huge got to be considered. How about George Abro with Frisky Magician? Those felt like the 3. But, you know, Asmussen, who's crazy hot, everything's running. Banana Thief for Clark Brewster. Maybe that's Clark's win. Casey tells me you got a call about the jumper. Dave, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. I was hoping that you could possibly cover the 10th race. I'd like to hear your thoughts at Saratoga. You've got some really, really expensive purchases that are at the level of 16,000.
Yep.
I actually happen to have a half brother to probably the most expensive purchase in there, and I'm new at the game, so I'm just trying to understand what it is that I'm looking at, and I just wanted your opinion on the race, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I'm guessing you've got the sibling to Bronze Age or to Smash Williams.
Correct. The second one.
Smash Williams. The
yes,
the $460,000 more than ready. Yeah. One at Gulfstream in May and then immediately dropped to 30,000. And this is Stone Street and Let's Go. And do you want to use the term fire sale? It's obvious that there was a problem here. You know, he was a yearling purchase, Dave, that wasn't ready at two. That's your first indication that, you know, there's a bit of an issue. You can see that if you go back to May, Todd had him work on the turf course at Palm Beach Downs, so they're looking for a little bit of anything. And he must have, when he came north, he must have been okay, because he ran a nice race at Maiden Special Foes and wins, or ran second there, but then came back, wins in May. And so this is a horse that has got issues. One started in June and of 2017 and drops down to 30, now drops to 16. I mean, they're clearing inventory.
Yeah, I just want to get your opinion on that. Being the fact that I have a half to it, I'm rooting for him, but also trying to learn the game at the same time.
How did you acquire the sibling?
Quite luckily, just made some phone calls and found the gentleman that had him. So I kind of stumbled into it. Mine is by Candy Ride.
Nice. Who's training?
Hector Palma down here in Southern Cal.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
We're very lucky and very happy. And this game is just, it's incredible. I've only had one runner that ran back in February. And first time in a race, we won by six lengths. That was the thrill of our lives. And we're just trying to keep moving forward and keep looking for that same feeling, if you know what I mean. It's awesome.
I love it. What tripped the impetus to get involved?
Always been interested. My uncle was the assistant track superintendent at Hollywood Park for over 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Always on the backside with him on his tractor as I was growing up, just watching, learning, seeing Charlie Whittingham, Jack Van Berg, listening to them tell stories, and always just so interested and was blessed enough to pocket some money. And, you know, my dad used to say digging coffee cans in the backyard and putting the money away, and was able to step up one day and bought this filly that we raced back in February, and it's just led to more things. And it's just been really, really incredible, the people that hold your hand. We've made good friends with the folks at BG Thoroughbred Farm here in Southern California. The manager there, Marcos Menavar, has been a blessing. In return, he's introduced us to Hector Palma, and I go every Sunday morning to Clocker's Corner and just meet all the people there that I can, shake hands, and learn as much as I can.
That's tremendous. And I'm just looking at the produce records. So the one that you've got, the sibling, Union Ride, you named him.
Correct. Yeah,
really
we named
nice.
Him Union Ride.
I love it.
Well, is he fingers crossed, and that's all we can do at this moment. I just enjoy going to the farm and watching him grow up. As a matter of fact, Steve, today is his first day working towards his racing career. He's at the BG Thoroughbred Farm now, and he's working towards getting ready to be at the track.
Really nice. And a 2-year-old, and best of luck with him. What's the filly's name?
Strike at Daylight.
Strike at Daylight. Nice. All right. We're putting these down, and everybody will be rooting. Is she going to run? She'll run at Del Mar?
No. Unfortunately, she had an incident, and she's no longer with us.
Oh, boy.
Ugh.
Yeah. So yeah. It's the up and the down. Oh, my gosh.
Correct. Wow. Yeah, it was all within about a four-week period, and you talk about the roller coaster ride. But we've got the memories. We've got the photos and the beautiful glass plate that Santa Anita gave us, and we're really, really appreciative of everything that we've achieved to this point. Very small time in a little group of folks that we've got here, but we just enjoy it as much as the million-dollar races. It doesn't matter to us. We just have a great time.
Well, best of luck, Dave. I'm delighted you called, and enjoy the summer season, and we'll be watching for Union Ride.
We listen to you every day. We enjoy your show very much here in Southern California. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Dave, I love that. Getting into the game like this, and how about growing up riding the tractor with the uncle? That's great at Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Great memories. That's for sure.
I love it. Best of luck.
Okay, thanks so much, Steve.
As Dave called about this 10th race, that I said, this is the kind of problem you run into at Saratoga, where when their 2-year-olds are coming in, and they're coming from the places like training centers and operations like Stone Street, and in this case partnered with Let's Go, there's just no benefit. If the horse is not going to be an allowance horse and if it's not going to be a stake horse, they move on. And this horse clearly had the one start at 2 and now 2 starts at 3, breaks the maiden, and time to find a new home. And nothing says Smash Williams won't be productive, but as a Keeneland September yearling, $460,000, out of the Dixie Union mare, Union Waters. And good job by Dave, the candy ride that they picked up. Good for them. And there's actually a weanling on the ground by Mosler. The mare lost her 2017 foal, but she's productive. She's thrown 3 winners. No black type, but she got Opidium with Spitestown. She got an Include gelding, not a gelding at the time, but got an Include colt, Big Daddy Blue, and then she got Smash Williams. And now, best of luck today with Union Ride. That's tough to win a race with a debuter and then have it get hurt and pass. But I know what he's talking about. Anybody that's been involved knows. Let's do this. We'll take a timeout. Seth just got off television. He just sent me a note. Okay, so let's take a break here. Seth Merrow joins us next, and Jeremy Plonk to close out the morning. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is Express Bet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with Express Bet. And while you're at it, don't miss Express Bet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, that top 4 finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool Fun in the Sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete Fun in the Sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous. I'm calling the shots, so see you over a month. It doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour three. What a nice visit that was. Dave Smith, and watching now for his two-year-old. And that was, it's always fun hearing about forays into the game on that front. And yeah, we're having fun getting ready for a couple of starters, certainly here at Saratoga, the two little fillies we've got, the New York breds, the colt, I don't know, we'll probably get the colt to probably start too, but he's a two-turn horse, so he may take a little bit longer. But Minute Mouse and Corporal Magdalena got some people that have already been up here the first 10 days, and our friend Neil Kleinberg in town, and his cousin Mark, they got involved. First time they've been owners. So excited. They're so excited. And even just to go watch the horses gallop, and they've been getting gate schooling. It's an experience. You know, I won't say that it's an experience money can't buy, because actually money does buy it. That's it. Specifically, actually. but it's priceless, though, when you get the biggest prize, whether it's just any kind of win, or, you know, some people are satisfied, you know, just to, you know, go to the paddock and have a horse run. My biggest satisfaction of what we've done with the with our DT stables has been the people who never imagined that they would be involved in the game. And many have gone on and you know, become full-fledged owners in their own right. And that's brought 120 plus people into the game like this over the last 10 years. And it gives you something when you're at Saratoga and you have the chance to go, you know, in the mornings, and even just the smallest part, even if you're just a little, whatever it is, 5%, 10%, doesn't matter. You're part of the game, and the game really appreciates it. And you know, the little benefits that make it worthwhile. You know, opportunity to you know, to sit in a box, to go to the paddock, to, you know, all that. It enhances the racing experience. So we urge anybody, everybody to, if you have an inkling, there's a package out there for you somewhere that in your area, or even if you do it remotely and watch from where you live. Jeremy Plonk, he can appreciate the ownership experience, undoubtedly, and has rubbed elbows with the biggest owners in the game over the years. And Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You know, they say the best way to become a millionaire as an owner in racing is to start with $5 million. So, I mean, it's, like you said, money can buy the happiness and the excitement of it, but it's a tough way to make a living out of it. It's certainly a recreational affair for many and a sporting pastime, but boy, we sure need them, and we need more of them in the game. Horse players and owners are the lifeblood of it.
Very much, very much. Well, we haven't had a chance to talk to you too long, and I was joking earlier this morning. There was Countdown to the Crown, and now there's Aftermath of the Crown. And it feels like we're starting fresh to some degree.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because when you take Justify off the board, I mean, it opens everything back up. But what we've seen, you know, last week with the Haskell and the Jim Dandy, favorites continue to prevail, heavily backed runners. This is a theme that what we've seen throughout the course of this year. I mean, going all the way back to about February, we had that long run going into the Kentucky Derby. And, of course, through the Triple Crown, where all three favorites won. But favorites have won an inordinate amount of these prep races this year. Now, you could say that means we're talking about an uncompetitive group and everybody's avoiding each other, or you can talk about a very good group. And everybody, to a T, I think, going into the first Saturday of May, thought this was a really good crop of three-year-olds, right? I mean, after Justify kind of ran roughshod over them, you know, and through the Triple Crown Series, there was talk of, well, I don't know what this crop is now, you know, and maybe that's just, you know, doubting Thomas's and regular self-doubt popping in there. Everybody's optimistic in April, you know, March and April leading up to the Derby, and then afterwards everybody's kind of a little bit on a downer, especially when the Triple Crown winner's not running. So maybe just natural emotions on how we look at this crop, that we were excited about it, then we're kind of down on it. Now we got to kind of see if we can get jump-started again. But Good Magic running, you know, a really good race in the Haskell was positive. Vino Rosso, even in defeat, ran a good race up in the Jim Dandy. And, of course, the winner ran well. You know, a big-time race for Mashbeeson's horse there. And tenfold. And then you look at what the Curlin Stakes on Friday provided with Hofburg getting, you know, essentially a public workout. But he looked good doing it, and he moves towards the Travers. So we have horses we expected to run well last weekend, all run well, and that's been the case with this year's crop. So it kind of makes me think that we probably are looking at a pretty good crop we thought it was, an awfully good crop, going back to earlier this year. We're just not going to have Justify anymore as a barometer on it. And, you know, that's a shame for the racing fan in you and the historian in you that wants to get a better feel, because, you know, a crop is usually as good as the horse at the very top of it, you know? I mean, you can't have a brilliant group of three-year-olds without having a brilliant three-year-old, and we certainly have one. We just wish we could see him more often this year, but that's not happening.
What is your general policy judging the horses that will come from the regional derbies, Jeremy, and the King Zacharys and Core Beliefs? Was a mild fourth in the Haskell. I mean, how do we look at those that are going to get involved here late? King Zachary's probably the lone regional derby winner that is going to participate in the Travers, but we certainly have a field that it has got distinct achievement on the resumes. I mean, Catholic Boy, Wonder Godot in her way, Gronkowski with just the one cameo appearance, but, you know, the rest, Tenfold, Vino, Hofburg, Bravazo, Good Magic. I mean, it's all the horses you'd want.
Yeah, and, you know, you look this weekend, the West Virginia Derby basically pulls everybody out of the Iowa Derby, pulls everybody out of the Los Al Derby, like top three finishers in both of those races. That got the six horses it should get, you know, because you're looking at the later bloomers, the second tiers, and they're getting the run for a half million on Saturday at Mountaineer. So even that race kind of got the horses you'd want to see there. Again, we are just really justified away from having all the pawns on the chessboard, you know. And so when you talk about handicapping these regional derby horses, I mean, when you're talking about the regional derbies themselves, I like the horses that weren't really Triple Crown horses, you know. I don't like the retreads from the Triple Crown. When you get to the West Virginia Derby, the Iowa Derby, I don't want the horses who ran 12th, 14th in the Derby and now are just trying to find an easier spot. Those kind I don't like. They're south, I think, of their peak, of where, you know, they were built to peak in May and just weren't good enough. So I like the horses, you know, like a Once on Whiskey and horses like that that are coming to fore. Lion Knight, a horse who Asmussen didn't have ready for the Arkansas Derby grind, but now he's becoming, I think, you know, kind of like a horse who you might want to take a look at on Saturday at Mountaineer. Those sort of horses like that. When they come up, though, to the big league and get to the Travers, you know, unless you were talking about a brilliant start, but even in forecasting that, we don't get it right. You know, Arrowgate was 7-1 and wasn't even the lowest priced Bob Baffert horse when he won the Travers. You know, when these horses bubble up from underneath to run in something like the Travers, we rarely gauge them right, you know? I mean, and no one does. And so it's not a knock on a handicapper who says, I got to see this horse beat me, you know? There are some barns you might just have some blind trust with now, and Baffert would certainly be in that category. But even just a couple years ago, there wasn't blind trust for Baffert going in, you know, into the Travers Stakes with Arrowgate. So I think you want to stay with the more proven commodities for a race like the Travers, especially this year, because again, we have seen favorites win at almost every port of call going back to like mid-February. From somewhere along the line of like the Risen Star on, this has been an unbelievable run of logical winners in these major stakes races. So now you're getting all the logical winners together. What's going to happen when they all get together? I can't imagine a horse from off-Broadway being able to come in and knock off all those, because you're talking about 6-7 logical type horses that all have to not run their race. That just doesn't happen often. You know, I mean, upsets happen in horse races usually when there's like one big heavy hitter, everybody else's price is jacked up because the heavy favorite is 3-5, 4-5. That horse doesn't run his race. That's how you get upset. When there's a good deep field of 5-6 horses like we would be looking at in the Travers, how do you get to the seventh choice winning a race? When there are 6 pretty good options that all have to misfire, that's just asking too much.
Well, and that's a fair way to look at it. We'll I guess think that the wildest wild card is really the filly.
Yeah, right. Wonder Good. I didn't think the Queen's Plate Group was as good this year as it has been some years, and it's always. You know, we talk about this 3-year-old crop is you're only as deep as, you know, you got to start at the top and you need a lot of depth to go with it. The Queen's Plate never has that. Let's be honest. You know, it's Ontario sire restricted rate. Some years, though, there are 3 or 4 pretty good horses along the trail that fill out that field to 14. There wasn't a lot of depth in this year's Queen's Plate group. And again, Mark Cassie didn't even send a State of Honor that direction. You know, it just went with the filly, and She beat a group there that she should have beaten probably, and then of course it was almost a walk in the park at Fort Erie. So I think this is a massive, massive bite they're taking with her. I mean, she ranks the richest. We're talking about 1.25 miles, right? I mean, this isn't, you know, I mean, ranks the richest winning the Belmont was like one of the most remarkable things we've ever seen in 1.5 miles. So this is kind of similar in that category. She's no Rags to Riches to me. I mean, she's really good, but I can't imagine. Again, if this was a weak crop, if this was a weak crop of 3-year-olds, maybe it's the time that a filly jumps in, but she would be second or third choice in the filly race, right? I mean, Monomoy Girl and others in there. So she is the wild card, absolutely. I think she's a really good filly, but I don't think she's an all-time filly. And I think you're going to have to be a Rags to Riches all-time kind of filly to beat 6 or 7 really good 3-year-olds over 1.25 miles. That's just an incredible tall task for her. And and I can't imagine her doing it, but I like the sporting part of it, right? I mean, as a fan of horse racing, when the Phillies take on the boys, there's just an extra cachet about it, right? I mean, there's a little swagger, there's a little bounce in the steps. But as a kid, you know, I was born in 1971. I was a little bit short of my ninth birthday still when Genuine Risk ran in the Preakness against Kodak. And one of my first memories in horse racing as an eight-year-old is my mom screaming like crazy at the TV at Angel Cordero for floating Genuine Risk out, you know? And so there is something about the boys versus the girls that brings in people who aren't necessarily horse racing people, and people who are on the fringes become a little more passionate about it. I mean, look, the battle of genders is something that I don't care if it's politics, horse racing, you know, Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King. There is something to that, you know, and even in this society where we live in now, where you know, gender and things are a lot more equitable across many lines, and we don't necessarily look at male and female as much as we once did in the world, we're still not England. We're not where, you know, Phillies run against the boys all the time. So it is special in horse racing. It does make it more exciting. So I am very happy that she's in the race. I think it makes it a much better race. But as a bettor, I just can't imagine her beating six or seven of these three-year-olds.
What's your read on the late season, mid-year emergence of fillies? And I keep bringing it up with people because it's different than the usual development patterns where fillies are ahead of colts early and then the colts catch up from 2 years to three-year-olds. This group of fillies just keeps impressing, and you mentioned what it would be, what the scenario might be with Wonder Godot facing off against the one she's been running against when it came to the earlier portion of the year. But we've got Red Ruby, we've got She's a Julie, Monomoy Girl, Midnight Bisou, Wonder Godot, and you know, there's others nosing around that Coach Rocks is going to reemerge, going to run. We had Dale on TV the other day. I saw Roddy Valenti on Monday. They're going to run in the Alabama. I mean, we've got a bunch of fillies that are really held up their end through the middle part of the year.
Yeah, you know, the Breeders' Cup is like a celebration and a championship at the end of the year, but when it comes like to the Classic, does it necessarily keep like a Triple Crown winner still going, that kind of thing like that? In some cases maybe not. But the Breeders' Cup distaff in its history has been such a good, high-quality race. It's had so many legendary-type horses. I mean, if you look at the winners of the distaff, and you can match them up with the winners of the Classic just in terms of, like, bastions of the turf, you know, when you go back to 84 and all the way through, and how many just phenomenal winners of the distaff there were. There's as many phenomenal winners of the distaff as there is of the Classic. You know, the Classic sometimes can, well, it's a second-rate group of older horses. The handicap division's watered down. You know, we're still ruining the end of the American Racing Championship Series, you know, all that kind of stuff like that, that doesn't keep the older horses around enough. But the distaff has really been so strong. And I don't know if, like, giving it its own day on Friday changed the star quality of the distaff, and of course they're moving back now to Saturday as an undercard race, but it certainly didn't stunt any of the development of the distaff, and I think it probably did strengthen it to some degree, the division, and that trickles down to the whole year. And so, you know, to have this many quality, three-year-olds have done really well in the distaff too over the years, so it's a division where when you get a group of three-year-old fillies like this that are getting better throughout the summer like you're talking about, there's somewhere for them to go, and there's something really good on the horizon, and it just makes for a much deeper championship at the end of the year. This is a good group. I don't know why this one is developed a little bit later, I mean, to answer specifically your question more so than another, but the three-year-olds are going to add a tremendous amount of depth to a good older group, right? You've got a late who... You know, think about this. Who do you like at a mile and a quarter in the Classic right now? You know, I mean, think about it. Is it Diversified that far? I don't know. You know, I'm not excited to bet him. Is it Good Magic at a mile and a quarter? Nah, not for me. You know, I mean, like, who's the mile and a quarter horse right now in the country I don't know that it's not elated off of what she did in the Delaware Handicap off of that long layoff. So, it's a great division, and we get to see a little crossover this weekend with one, or next, this month with Wonder Cadot. It's a fun group, so I always like the disc golf. I hope that back on the Saturday portion of the card that it's still as prominent and not just thought of as the third leg of my pick five. What a fabulous, fabulous division it's been for the Breeders' Cup going all the way back to the beginning. And look, for many, many years, it was part of the undercard of the Breeders' Cup. So what they're doing now is not any kind of blasphemy to take it away from being a headline race on Friday. I think it'll be just fine on Saturday, but I don't think that Friday spot hurt it in stature for sure.
Well, speaking of Saturdays, before we go, update on now you're a good 6 weeks into the Express Bet TV, the XBTV programming, and certainly a great way to start a Saturday when it comes to these kinds of weekends at Del Mar, Saratoga. We got Arlington Million Day coming up. Good racing at Monmouth this past week, of course. Bring everybody up to date on the progress of the show.
Yeah, Race Day Express. It premieres at 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturdays, but it's really an on-demand item. And what they've found with the XBTV site is the on-demand activity is much stronger than the live activity. So give people what they want. And the Race Day Express show is generally about an hour in length with correspondents all around the country. Jason Blewett down in Florida, Richie Migliori up in New York, out on the West Coast with Zoe, and Millie's down at Del Mar for the summer reporting. Jeff and Aaron in the studio. They bring me in to kind of bring a statistical angle and edge to the show, and I'm happy to provide that role and take a look at some races. Sometimes we're on the undercard, sometimes we're looking at the major stakes from a statistical angle, and I've always appreciated that portion of it, along with the interviews and the workouts and everything that goes with it. So it makes for a really nicely rounded show, and I look forward to it continuing to grow. In recent weeks, they've done even more with the individual segments. It's like an hour to watch the show all the way through, but every single segment then is 5 minutes long, 6 minutes long, 3 minutes long, is broken down and then presented on the website at xbtv.com, and then, of course, on the Twitter feed at WatchXBTV. They're provided in chunks. So if you're just somebody who wants to find out what Jeff thinks of the Delaware Handicap, you could just watch that segment versus trying to scroll through the whole show and find it. So, this is television consumption in 2018, right? I mean, it's on demand. It's what I want. Menu shopping, and we're the Amazon Prime and Express, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, of how you can roll through and do things quicker and faster and more efficiently. And I think that's a good lesson in presentation of racing information. I love the long form shows when we can sit and listen to them and relax and have them on while things are going on. But for bettors, you join in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You don't want to see all the analysis of races that are already over. You just want the ones still to come. And they get that option with the different segments that are broken down. Of course, the Fun in the Sun Handicapping Tournament, the Express Bet rolling on, week three coming up. You can still join in on that. A lot of good stuff going on, and what a great summer time for racing. I'm looking forward to coming up your way. We're trying to make plans right now to get up there at Travers Week, so hopefully we can make all the arrangements and come see you then.
Excellent. Excellent, Jeremy. I appreciate it, and good to catch up, get the second half here as we work toward Travers, Pennsylvania Derby, and the Classic with the three-year-olds and everything else that's going on. So, Race Day Express, and Jeremy, a big part of what's been going on there. We're going to stay right here, too, and exactly 15 to the top of the hour, so no time for a break. Let's bring in Seth Merrow. He went long today, and Seth and I on Sundays frequently blow past 11 o'clock on television, and we certainly did this past Sunday where we had Marshall Graham and Dale Romans had a fun conversation. Seth, good morning.
Yep, some good feedback there on that one. And yeah, get Plonk up here. He's come up the last two or three years. He's been up here like a week before the meet. Then he takes out of town when the racing starts. Got to get Plonk up here for some racing action.
He will make it. I see him almost every year. And of course, we got the NBC people in town too. I saw where Nick Luck was shifting tack from Jersey after the broadcast for the Haskell on Sunday, and there'll be Whitney coverage this weekend. Meanwhile, Seth, looks like we gotta have to dodge a couple of more days here of some weather between now and Saturday.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the backstretch right now, and it's overcast, and it has kind of been. It never really rained. I wouldn't call it that. It just kind of spit a couple of times over the past hour and a half or so. Right now it's not doing anything, but it is overcast, and it's one of those days where you think something may show up, but it's also one of those days where it might not. It's going to be hit or miss, I think, for the next couple of days.
All right. Well, hope for the best. The fact that we haven't had any yet is a positive, because they were supposed to come at about 10 o'clock. Let's touch base. We got about 9 minutes to walk through this card, and I did a little bit of discussion after the scratches came out, and I thought this was a very vettable set of sequences, and there's some very tough decisions to make. There's some races where 6-7 horses, it looks like, can win. Those virtually all the turf sprints are challenging, and I wouldn't mind if we really hit on a couple of tough spots. Start with that third race, Maiden Claimers, turf sprinting.
Third race, let me just flip my page here. Maiden 40s. Yeah, I had six horses listed at the top of my page, but the 14 is among them. That's an AE that's scratched. So now I'm 10, 9, 12, and 7, but the 3 scares me a little bit too. I went out to the 10, Brock Mononoff, who goes out for George Weaver off a couple of decent second places in Maiden Special Company, now drops in for the tag. Hasn't been seen since last September, but a lot of times these, you know, horses taking the break from the two-year-old to the three-year-old season come back improved. Also gets a class drop, had shown some early speed last year, looked pretty good in that last race, which was the only try on the turf. So just looks like if this horse comes back with some fitness, Brock Mononoff could be live. Barrett's Party dropped to this level last time and just missed for Gary Gullo. So another one that seems like a logical fit in here. And then I went out to the 12, Unsullied. My spring at last, I like that sire is maybe producing some win early types. The career debut is okay. Was well beaten, but I thought with an okay number and the move over to the grass maybe intrigues me a little bit at a price. So I threw an Unsullied in as well. I had it 10, 9, 12, and 7.
Yeah, we're very close. I put Brock Mononoff on top as well, and I also used Unsullied as another price, 10-1 on him and 6-1 on Brock Mononoff. You mentioned Ferrat's Party, Ghost Giant. You hit all the right. Yeah, I think that's good. I'm actually I like hearing that. You look to the fourth, Seth, and here's 35 non-winners of three lifetime, and these are serious horses, and there'll be some claims out of here for 35. I mean, these are very useful allowance types, dropping down, former stake horses in some cases. This is a nice group. Mile and a 16th on the inner, and again, I made 7 out of the 11 as possible winners.
Yeah, I got 5, and there's a 6 that enters me, but I had 11, 6, 4, and 12. The 2 is a little bit scary. And I'll just toss out, I'll put a couple of bucks on Be Counted, the number 8 horse, because it's an Augustan horse. I think they point to this meet. They are part of the reason I'm a big Shepherd guy. Shepherd used to have these Augustan horses who came up and went off of prices. And I think they were just pointed towards the meet. So, as they say, I'll have a couple of bucks on Be Counted, but I put the 11 on top, Your Only Man, the Pletcher Runner, who I think is going to be an okay fit with this particular bunch. Tried this company last time and took the lead late and ran third, but again, just looking at the complexion of this field, I slightly went with Your Only Man. Well, a terrible day underneath. Nice win last time. Claimed out of that for Tommy Amos. Drops a little bit off the claim, so maybe there's a little bit of a concern there given that scenario. But sometimes, you know, folks come up to Saratoga and they're looking for a win. Santana on board. He's one of the jockeys that so far in the first, you know, week and a half of the meet has been riding very well and tricked up in the third spot for me, as opposed to Santana riding very well. Jose Ortiz struggling a little bit early in the Saratoga meet, but you know at some point it's going to click and turn in the right direction for him. It's a Rudy Rodriguez runner who has some back class, and I think we might get closer to that
in the second start of the year. So I have an 11, 6, 4, and 12.
The only overlap we have is the 6.
It's that kind of race.
Yeah, exactly. And I at 15-1, I'll take Mott, Adam Wachtel, with that pretentious, going to save all the ground and can suck along. I Junior Alvarado, good under these kinds of circumstances, but acoustic, soluble, be counted, Glenn Richmond, your only man. I mean, it brutal. Just brutal. As many as you can afford, basically, depending on your look. One place on the second half of the pick four and the last two legs of the pick five, Seth, you could tiptoe through maybe our circle of love in the fifth and maybe Corey scores in the sixth. And that would give people leeway to spread wider in the third and fourth.
I did use our circle of love. Experience counts, and I like these maiden races at Saratoga to look up the breeding, and I like to use the first-time starters on the connections and whatnot, but those angles for me are more potent in two-year-old races. This fifth race is, you know, three-year-olds and up, and so given the experience of our circle of love, I went with her on top. But underneath, I do have first-time starters. I think Irish Princess for Brad Cox could be very tough. I would probably go at least two deep in there and use Irish Princess. And then the remaining part of the Godolphin entry, the 1A, and Smile More also could be interesting for Horatio DePaz, who does very well with bursters and did very well up here last summer also. So, again, I thought the experience probably does give an edge to our circle of love in that fifth. In the sixth, I went 8-3, 1-5, use Sassy Agnes, Linda Rice, trainee as a first-time starter that I thought could be a little bit live in that sixth race.
Fair enough. Second half of the card, state-bred allowance, mile on the inner turf. These are my favorites. The productivity of these races over the years has been uncanny. And you handicap, if you're handicap on figs, typically these horses are separated by no more than three lengths, and that's what makes it fun. It all comes down to pace and trip.
Yeah, I went with the Chad horse. Clearly question marks on the surface switch, but I went 1-8-12. It's a non-winner's a one other than, and a lot of these have had chances, you know, to break through that condition and just haven't done it in any number of starts. This one, only a couple of starts. The career debut was pretty good. Then went backwards in the second start. Now they come back on the turf. So, again, there's question marks here. But I thought off of that career debut, I'll put my trust in, you know, Chad Brown and Clarovich. Clarovich currently the leading owner at the meet. So I'll look at take it to scale on top and hope that 6-1 holds up, because I think, you know, if you're going to take a little shot on a question mark like this, you want to do find a little bit of value. Shiraz in the second spot. Jose Ortiz on board for Mike Maker. Stuck in maybe a little bit of a bridesmaid mode, which doesn't give you a lot of confidence that if this horse gets in the ding-dong battle in the stretch, he'll go by. But certainly the numbers fit with this group. And then follow the signs for Steve Asmussen. I think, again, looking at this particular group, probably a pretty good fit in here today. So, again, for me, 1-8-12.
Well, the 1-8, I certainly agree. And pocket player Tommy Bush, I'm absolutely using. I think is exactly the kind of horse in a race like this that you key off of. At least my approach to these. And there's a few horses in here that absolutely can invade. That New Jersey John is a nibbler that finishes third and fourth in this kind of a setting, and is going to be, you know, because Mike Denny is not as well known and as well fancied by, you know, the spot players, the 12-1 probably floats up. These are the best races invariably in terms of your mutual explosions. Let's talk about the stake race. Here's these non-winners of the sweepstakes over periods of time, and I love these because it brings in classy horses. What you doing here?
I went 8-7-5-4. I thought you're a love. I could have gone either way with the top two. I slightly tilted for your love. Just a heavenly score, more turf on the page. But you look at that dirt race three back, and that seems to indicate the horse belongs. And also you look at that July 25th workout. So I put Heavenly Score underneath. I thought Your Love came in pretty good form for Chad. But again, I could have flipped around those top two. I think it goes through them. Third spot, I use Karen, who comes in good form off a couple of third places in stakes races. And Come Dancing is a horse I didn't know what to do with. I did a seminar last night, and I said, if you look at these races as puzzles and look at the horses as puzzles, if this is a jigsaw puzzle, Come Dancing is one of those puzzles with all black pieces. It's hard to know what to make of a horse like this off of that December race where the horse threw the 96 buyer, then the follow-up was a little bit of a dud, but the comeback was pretty good, but not that same number, you know, not that 96 level. Nice workout, though, that led into that race, and the second start back, Come Dancing, for me, could go either way. I put it down in the fourth spot. Scares me, but as I say, I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. I went 8-7-5-4.
7-5-8-4 for me. Same kinds of thoughts. Karen at 9-2. If she's going to go off as fourth choice, she's very attractive for some mutual productivity. And what's your double play, 9th and 10th, real quick?
In the 9th, 4, 9, 6, and 11, the number 4, Frisky Magician. And again, Jose Ortiz on board. As I say, there's going to be a day, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's this week, where he clicks and gets like 3 or 4 and gets back on the beam. And I have him on a horse that I just think coming out of some stakes action is going to fit very nicely. So Frisky Magician, kind of logical. 4, 9, 6, and 11 in the 9th, and in the 10th, I have it 7. 8 and 11, the number 7 horses, Smash Williams, who gets some class relief, but with one of those moves that makes you scratch your head, they paid $460,000, drops in for $16,000 today. But I just, I have it on top with some trepidation. Go Big or Go Home will be underneath on a rebound in the second start off the claim for Gary Gullo. So again, in the 10th, 7, 8, and 11.
2-4. For me in the 9th, Samadhi Sky and Frisky Magician, and 13-7-11 in the 10th. Seth, good luck. CapitalOTB.com
.com, you got it.
What about the bet? The bet, CapitalOTBBet.com
is the betting platform, yeah.
That's the platform. I just saw that, actually. I noticed the bet part the other day. Seth, good luck. I'll see you later.
All right. We'll see you. Good luck to everybody.
Seth Merrow. Thanks. Jeremy Plonk visited. It was good to catch up with him, get some 3-year-old reset thoughts. Pete Pornatel, Sid Fernando on the sale coming up Monday and Tuesday. Previews will start. They're putting the yearlings in the barns. Phil D'Amato, fun conversation with Phil. Enjoyed that a lot. Best of luck today, everybody. Knock on wood, weather holding up. Back tomorrow, Thursday edition. HRRN today, 3 o'clock. I assume Jude and Anthony. And we'll talk to you in the morning.
If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.